It's Thursday, the 4th of February. I'm Andrew Pearce. This is The Daily Show, and it's coming from Daily Mail Newsroom. You know that old cliche about life begins at 40? Well, I'm speaking to a model who found fame after starting modelling in her 40s. Also, we'll be talking about retraining. Two-thirds of people in Britain are retraining in the hope of finding new jobs because of the pandemic. The third lockdown has had a worse effect on people in Britain's mental health than previous ones, according to major new research. But first, the rollout is going well. We've passed the peak of the latest coronavirus, according to the government. So when, oh when, are we going to start to lift the restrictions? So, according to government scientists, Britain is finally past the peak of the latest wave of coronavirus. That's according to the government's chief scientist, Chris Whitty. Boris Johnson holds out the hope that a plan for lifting lockdown, or certainly a route map, will be published on February the 22nd. The hospitality industry, which has been brought to its knees by the pandemic, have welcomed the move, but say pubs and restaurants in particular need specific dates because, of course, they have to plan in advance. Joining me to talk about this is Sasha Lord, who is the nighttime economy advisor for Greater Manchester and co-founder of the Parklife Festival and Warehouse Project. Sasha Lord, we talked about this so many months ago, The impact on the hospitality industry. Devastating is presumably the only word you can use. I work in London, live in London. I can see for myself what it's like. How bad is it in Greater Manchester?
Well, your word's correct. It's absolutely devastating. We've been given such a hammer blow. There has been some support, but, you know, sadly, we've seen many, many closures, mass job losses. And we know for a fact that possibly up to 4 in 5 businesses haven't got the cash to get through this month.
That's a dramatic figure.
Substantial. It's very concerning. And we're urging now that the Chancellor on the 3rd of March and the next budget, you know, please extend the VAT reduction, please extend the business rates relief, and please extend furlough too, until it can operate at 100%.
And 4/5 of businesses in your area that haven't got the money to get through another month or two, how many jobs does that represent, do you think?
To be honest, I couldn't tell you. I know there's 420,000 people who used to work in the nighttime economy in Greater Manchester. Those numbers have been dramatically reduced. But, you know, one thing I would say, Andrew, is look, since lockdown and being somebody who's come from the hospitality sector all my life, 26 years, I've been the first one to shout and scream and not the government. But actually, what a fantastic job they are doing of this rollout of the vaccine.
They certainly are, yeah.
Incredible, far, far better than my expectations. So, you know, hats off. It's, you know, for once we can say it's world leading. It really is. It's incredible.
But does that give you hope too, that the vaccination rollout thus far going very well, no sign anytime soon it's going to stutter. Does that give you hope soon that they can then publish a roadmap out of the lockdown? Because as you say, your members, pubs and restaurants need specific dates because not least they've got to get booze in, food in, staff in, all the rest of it.
No, you're quite right. And I think it showed the last time they asked us to reopen how they didn't quite understand the hospitality industry. You know, you cannot open a pub with 3 days notice or a restaurant. You've got to order the food. You've got to order the stock. You've got to clean the pipes, reroad to retrain staff and put new measures in place. So it simply wasn't achievable. And many couldn't open the last time round or not on the proposed date anyway. So I think the good news that I listened very, very carefully yesterday to the Prime Minister's conversation when he came out at 5 o'clock. And one of his questions, he did specifically say he would give dates on this route map out on the 22nd of February. And that was very, very encouraging for the sector, because if we do have a date, then it's something that we can work towards.
And you have your own input, you have your own way into government. The impact, if money isn't forthcoming in the budget, Sasha Lord, what's going to happen? Are those 4/5 of businesses you talk about, are they not going to reopen?
My honest feeling is if we have not got a date, then yes, the majority won't. If we are given a date, Andrew, and this, I'm just saying, for example, this isn't a solid date. If they turn around and say, okay, the 1st of April, if everything goes as it should, will be able to open food-led restaurants and pubs at 50% capacity, then that's something we can work towards and stretch towards. And I'm sure there can be conversations with banks and lenders how to get there. But if there's not clarity and transparency, then yes, people are just going to give up. You know, there's a bigger picture here as well from operators I'm talking to. It's not just about the cash in the bank or lack of it. It's people's mental health. You know, they've gone through this since the 20th of March last year. You know, and people have just had enough of this roller coaster. They cannot handle it. And to be completely blunt, we are now very, very sadly seeing suicides. And there's three people I know myself who tragically have taken their own lives.
Very depressing. Just finally, Sacha Lord, which is most badly affected? Is it restaurants, pubs, or is it impossible to tell the difference?
No, I can pinpoint it exactly. So, in tier two, you were allowed to open if you were serving food. We'll all remember this debate about this ridiculous scotch egg with a pickle or garnish.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Absolute nonsense. So, you know, what I'm saying now is when we can reopen, what about those wet-led pubs? Most of those pubs are actually, they are community pubs in our most deprived areas. And in Greater Manchester, there's 1,806 of them. So why is it right that I can go to a restaurant with social distancing, all those measures in place, I can have a few drinks, have lunch, but people that live in our most deprived areas, the lowest paid, they can't, even though all those measures will still be in place. So that doesn't really seem fair to me. It felt almost a bit of an attack on class culture. So they're the ones who are being really hit hard, and they're the ones that don't just serve a pint. You know, they actually serve the local community.
All right, that's Sacha Lord. He's the nighttime economy advisor for Greater Manchester, co-founder of Part Life Festival and, of course, the Warehouse Project. Thanks for joining us. Two-thirds of people in Britain are retraining in the hope of finding different jobs because of the pandemic, of course. This is according to new research by the Reed Employment Agency. Almost all of those surveyed, 93%, plan to put their newfound skills to find work this year. I'm joined now by James Reed, who is the chairman of Reed Employment Agency. Mr. Reed, it's very encouraging, isn't it? Rather than getting down in the dumps about the fact they may have lost their job or they may be down in the dumps about being locked down, people are going online and finding ways to look for new opportunities and to retrain.
It's really striking, Andrew. Yes, I think it's a very different approach this time than we might have seen in previous recessions. And I think it's because it's possible to do so much online now. There's an amazing array of courses, really short courses and longer-term courses leading to qualifications that you can access at the click of a button. So people are really using that now. And it's really interesting what they're studying. There's sort of a huge range of things that people are studying, some of which are sort of for their own personal development and some of which are for professional purposes. But I think it's a really enriching opportunity for a lot of people, especially as we're so locked in at the moment. When you're locked in and locked down, it's a good time to learn something new.
What sort of interesting things could you single out that they're studying, whether it is for their own personal benefit or for professional reasons?
Well, it's worth pointing out on our website, on reed.co.uk, we've got over 55,000 courses listed. And most of those courses are either free or cheap. I mean, they don't cost very much. So I think 88% of the courses that we sell are less than £20. They're very accessible. And looking at the ones that the top five paid for courses are really interesting. I mean, the number one paid for course in the last 30 days is British Sign Language, levels
really?
1 and 2. So people are learning sign language. The second one, and this is pretty telling, is understanding anxiety, depression, CBT. So that tells you something about what's happening out there.
Mm.
Third is leadership and management. Fourth is project management. And fifth, Microsoft Excel complete course. So that gives you a big range, doesn't it?
And
those are the paid for ones. So, and then the free courses, we've got essential IT skills, a free online CSCS course, which is for construction, business administration, counselling skills, and HR fundamentals.
Pretty interesting, isn't it? Fascinating that people are learning British Sign Language in such large numbers. I guess perhaps they've got the TV on in the background. Maybe they've got News 24 on, or they've got the daily press conference, for instance, with Nicola Sturgeon, the Scottish First Minister. There's always a sign language person. I think there is with the Welsh First Minister too.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think it's Well, it's a skill that's useful to have because it improves your opportunities to communicate. And it's also a skill you can work from home with, isn't it? I mean, you can be actively employed as a sign language person from your own front room. So I think it's quite a clever thing to learn. And I think, you know, it's good that so many people are doing that.
Why do you think as well that, according to your research, that 2/3 or 61% anyway, of those people who were made redundant last year are feeling more hopeful about their prospects this year? Is it because they can go online and retrain? What do you put it down to?
Well, I think people can see things are beginning to improve and also right. that they have more options perhaps than they had in the past because they can learn new skills relatively easily online. I think both those things are true. But I was just looking at our data for the last week, and it's really interesting that looking at the jobs that we've taken over the last week, we've taken over 50,000 new jobs in a week. And we've taken, that's 5% more jobs than we took in the corresponding week last year. So despite this lockdown, we've got more live jobs coming on now than we had a year ago. So I think the labor market is opening up. It might be hard to believe because, you know, there's so much negativity about the economy in the news. But our data, which is a leading indicator, shows that there are more opportunities coming online. So I think there are good reasons to be hopeful and good reasons to be more optimistic, certainly, than we might have felt 6 months ago.
And just to get that figure right, Mr. Reed, 50,000 jobs you've taken on in the last week compared to last year?
Yeah, and it was 5% more than last year. So it was
right.
6,000 or 45, 7,000 last year. So yes, it's growing. And there's a huge variety of, you know, opportunities. I mean, there's no denying that the labour market has been through a huge period of turmoil and change, and a lot of people obviously regrettably have lost their jobs. Other people are furloughed, but there are new jobs emerging, and you know, we are going through a transition. But I think we're coming out of the other side now, and I think we'll see more jobs this year than last year. And hopefully it will be possible for people to get back to work quickly.
Let's hope so. That's James Reed, who is the founder of the Reed Employment Agency. Thanks so much. The third lockdown, and my word, it does seem to have dragged on and on and on, has had a profoundly worse effect on people's mental health than previous ones, according to new research by Savanta. Savanta's poll shows that people's approval also of how Boris Johnson and his government are handling the pandemic are also marginally up. But joining me to discuss this is Chris Hopkins, who is Associate Director of Savanta Comres. Chris, the stuff about mental health, it's pretty bleak and pretty depressing. What does it say?
Yeah, so, I mean, we've been tracking, you know, those that say that their mental health has gotten better or worse since the start of the pandemic. And at the start, you know, we were getting a net score, so that's those that say it's better, take away those that say it's got worse, you know, around kind of the mid-20s, so, you know, minus 23, minus 24, roughly at the start of the pandemic. And what we've seen, you know, through the autumn and the winter last year, that was dropping into, you know, the low 20s, the mid, you know, minus 28. And what we've seen in the last week is a real drop. So we're now at minus 36, and that's comfortably the lowest figure that we've recorded since we started tracking right at the start of the pandemic. I guess, you know, to sum up, you know, net mental health scores that people are giving us in our daily coronavirus tracker are really at the lowest that they've been since the pandemic started sort of last spring.
And do you put this down to anxiety over jobs, job prospects, or is it more fundamental, Chris? Is it the fact that people are stuck indoors? Maybe they may be working from home alone. Maybe they haven't got a job. They've lost their job. And even if they're working from home with the family, the children, homeschooling, putting pressure on relationships, are they all the factors that are causing this, do you think?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I think specifically on jobs, we do also ask within the same sort of question type about job security. And we haven't seen any real changes in that throughout the course of the pandemic, other than sort of in the summer when people did start going back to work and actually job security improved and then it dipped again throughout lockdown. But it's not any worse at the moment than we've really seen throughout the pandemic. I get a sense from our daily coronavirus tracker, and, you know, just the general polling that we're doing, that we're really that there is just a lockdown fatigue now. And while the public are still fairly supportive of lockdown, They are fairly supportive of pretty much any policy that the government puts forward, because ultimately the public do favour saving lives over the economy, over sort of their own personal self-interest. I think the fact that, you know, it's been January, the weather is poor, we're not getting a lot of daylight. I think, you know, this is the first time that Britain has been locked down, in these months. I think the first time that we went into lockdown back in March 2020, I think the clocks had just changed and it was new and it was novel. And I think, you know, there was definitely a sense of more of a sense of togetherness, and obviously the fact of terrorism will obviously help that. And all of that ultimately has really disappeared. And I feel, we get a sense in our data, anecdotally from some of the qualitative work that we do, but also the quantitative work, that I think, you know, there is just fatigue now. And while the public are generally on board and understand the reasons for lockdown, that doesn't stop them feeling pretty negative about it, or at least having a very negative impact on how they feel.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what the government's going to do about this when this is all over, Chris, because these problems don't just automatically go away.
No, agreed. And I think I mean, that's a good point, Andrew, really, because, obviously we're tracking a lot of metrics and our standards. What we're known for is obviously our voting intention and approval and whatnot on prime ministers and leaders and things like that. And we're not seeing a whole heap of change. And I think something that I've kind of hypothesized recently is that, when things can get a little bit better, there is a real opportunity for one of the main parties to really kind of, get a grasp on the public mood, and really, if it's the Conservatives, to open up a bit more of a lead over Labour if they really end up, I think it's all about, what kind of aspirations post-lockdown, post-coronavirus, can either political party really kind of inspire the country with. And I think that's a real, without kind of making it sound opportunistic, in the wake of what is ultimately...
But that's what politicians are, pandemic. They're opportunistic.
Well, I mean, yeah, of course, but, without kind of capitalising on what ultimately is a tragedy, I think it does present a little bit of an opportunity because our kind of general political... metrics that we've been measuring, they're not moving a lot, that's partly down to the fact that politicking as normal isn't normal at the moment. Ultimately this pandemic came not too long after Brexit, and I feel like general sense from the British public was that they kind of breathed a big sigh of relief, and then along comes the next trauma. That's been completely completely different, and a completely different kettle of fish. There's definitely been more consensus, in terms of the opposition and the government. But I think there is an opportunity really for the major parties to try and move the needle a little bit with the public. In the recovery post COVID, and I think that's where people like me, who really enjoy elections, I think that gives us quite an exciting next few years. But at the moment, I think things are going to remain fairly steady, fairly constant and fairly static while the pandemic plays out.
And just finally, Chris, do you detect there's a short-term lift for the government and Boris Johnson and Matt Hancock in the successful rollout of the vaccines? Because while this podcast, I've been very critical of many things they've done in the handling of the pandemic, it seems they've got it spot on so far, touch wood, of course, on the vaccines.
Yeah, of course, and I think what we started to see, it didn't necessarily translate into changes of approval. I think we saw a few things week on week, but there was a sense of optimism among the public, and that is also slowly disappearing, because I think that there was perhaps an assumption that vaccine rollout would lead to lockdowns being over sooner, and that doesn't appear to be the case at the moment. So I feel that even despite the optimism surrounding the vaccine, and ultimately that is going to be good news, I think because that's not currently being sort of seen in the daily fatalities figures and the cases figures, and it's still very much kind of doom and gloom in terms of the here and now. So while there is something to look forward to, I feel that while the public don't really have a sense of the timescale, there isn't necessarily a massive bump in terms of sort of public approval of what the government are doing, of what individual government ministers are doing. But ultimately, I do think that the public are generally fairly confident, or have at least shown increased confidence in some of our polling, regarding how the rollout is going. And I think ultimately that could end up being the saviour, possibly for the government, who you know, throughout the pandemic started out, you know, our kind of metrics showed that, you know, the public thought they were handling it very well in April and May last year, and that quickly dropped off, you know, mostly after the government advisor went up to Barnard Castle.
Dominic Cummings, of course. All right, that's Chris Hopkins, who is the Associate Director of Savanta ComRes. So, I'm very delighted. It's that time of the programme, which I much enjoy, although often the news is depressing. But today, Ruth Sunderland, business editor at Daily Mail, has some very intriguing stuff to talk about. War bonds, Ruth, what are they?
Well, war bonds, the name suggests, really, they were introduced in the First World War to help finance the huge effort, the huge economic effort needed to defeat Germany. And what's being floated at the moment is the idea that we should do an updated version of those war bonds. So whether you want to call them recovery bonds or economic reconstruction bonds or anything, corona bonds, you could call them what you like, really. But the idea would be similar, that you would raise money from the public in order to pay for rebuilding the economy post-COVID. And the feeling is that these could be issued through the national savings, which everybody's quite familiar with, and that they could be quite similar to national savings certificates and bonds that I think a lot of people are used to, where you invest a fixed amount of money for a fixed time and then you get a set rate of interest. And obviously at the moment, people are getting really quite pitiful returns from the conventional banks and building societies. So this could really kill two birds with one stone. It could help savers find a more attractive place to put their money, and it could provide cash for worthwhile projects when we rebuild, you know, for public transport or offshore wind and so on.
So how technically does it work, Ruth? I mean, how much would a typical war bond cost, and how long would you be required to invest it in? Would there be a minimum investment term?
So I think, I mean, none of this is all very much at the ideas stage, but I think what you might envisage would be that perhaps there'd be a minimum investment of £1,000 or something like that, and that you might give people options that you could invest for 1 year or for 5 years, depending how long you were prepared to tie that money up. And the idea would be that you might get a little bit more, obviously, the longer that you leave it. Now, clearly, those of us who've been lucky enough to keep our jobs have been spending quite a lot less than we normally would. And the governor of the Bank of England has pointed to the fact that there are £150 billion worth of excess savings that we've accumulated during the lockdown. So if even a fraction of that money went into recovery bonds, our modern-day war bonds, that could really make a big difference. It might even mean we don't have to raise taxes, or at least not so much, if we've got the money to rebuild Britain from savers. I also think a really good thing about this is that it would be a psychological boost for everybody, because we would all be able to feel we were doing something quite concrete.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, to rebuild.
And just finally, Ruth, will we get more flesh on this bone in the budget next month? When do we think we'll get more detail?
Well, we certainly hope so. I think this, personally think, you know, nobody knows what Rishi Sunak is going to do or not do. I personally think this would be a fantastic rabbit for him to pull out of his hat. And, you know, you could really get the nation behind him on this one. And I think savers have had a raw deal for so long, and this would be a really good, really inspiring campaign to get everybody working behind the economic recovery. And wouldn't that be great?
I think it's great. It sounds great. And clever PR, of course, by that Chancellor, who's pretty good at his PR, Ruth, isn't he?
He's good at his PR, isn't he? So let's hope he picks up on this one.
Absolutely. That's Ruth Sunderland, business editor at the Daily Mail. Thanks for joining us. A model who found fame and work with Tesco and Fig Leaves after starting modelling in her 40s is to host a day of Instagram interviews to inspire other women in midlife. Rachel Peru wants to spread a message of body confidence, self-love, and she's doing it by launching a new podcast series, Out of the Bubble. Rachel joins me now. Rachel, why that name, Out of the Bubble?
I've lived in a small town in Yorkshire all my life. It's a really beautiful place to grow up, but sometimes I have felt trapped. And when I reached 40, I started a new chapter, I started a new career, and I felt like I'd stepped out of that bubble. So that was one of the reasons. And the other reason was I really wanted to inspire women over 40 to step out of their comfort zones and try new things later in life.
You're called, it's a lovely expression, I love it, a silver-haired curve model. How did it come about that in your 40s you ended up becoming a famous and successful model? What had you been doing before?
It was never on my radar. I'd actually gone back to university at 40 to do some training to be an early years teacher, so I'd got a degree in my 40s. But an opportunity came along to volunteer for Macmillan local charity fashion show, and I loved it. And I've done that for the last 10 years now. And each year I did it, my confidence grew, and the photographer kept saying, you know, you're really quite photogenic. Have you thought about doing it? And I never had thought about it at all, but I've got three children. My youngest at that point was about 14, so I had a new lease of life and a new opportunity. So I thought, well, actually, yeah, I'll go ahead and see what happens. Not thinking anything particularly that it, you know, would come of it, and got signed by a London agency straight away. So it's been an amazing journey, really.
How fabulous. And are you still enjoying it?
Absolutely love it, yeah. I like being in front of the camera. I'm much more body confident than I was in my 20s and 30s. I like the people that I meet. I've met so many different people from across the world. And it's just a great, great opportunity. It's something that I never imagined I would have done when I was younger.
And what's made you decide, in a sense, if this doesn't sound too cliched, Rachel, to give something back? Because that's what effectively you're doing with Out of the Bubble.
Yeah, I mean, obviously last year with the pandemic, modelling work really quietened down because I live in Yorkshire, or most of my work's in London. So I really threw myself into the podcast. I've had the podcast for 2 years now, and it has been a real lifeline for me because it meant I could carry on interviewing on Zoom, and I get so much inspiration and a real lift from the women that I interview that it kept me going last year. It was a real boost. So because I wanted to launch the next series, I wanted to show, you know, my support to everybody else and give something back to other women.
And you've got some of the people who are backing this. You've got the radio's Katie Hill. She's an Atomic Kitten, I think, wasn't she? Natasha Hamilton.
Yes. Yeah.
So these are women, also the oldest women in the all-women expedition team that ski to the North Pole. How intimidating it must have been to meet somebody like that.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to having these conversations with some of the women. I've got an amazing diverse section of women. You know, the youngest woman is 27, and she is really proactive in trying to fight ageism, so that'll be interesting to talk to her about midlife. And the oldest woman I've got is in her late 60s, and she's just, actually, her book's just been published today. So I've got a real cross-section of ages, and, you know, some of the celebrities that I've got, including Natasha Hamilton, Natalie Anderson, Stephanie Hirst, Katie Hill. It will be a great opportunity for me to talk to these women and get some insight about how they feel about approaching 40 and then those that are in midlife.
And this, so these conversations will be on Instagram, and it's going to raise money, I think, for two charities which support and champion women. What are those charities?
Yeah, I've chosen SmartWorks, the Leeds branch, and SmartWorks is a national charity that supports women of all backgrounds, getting them back into employment through coaching and confidence building, and providing them with clothing for interviews. And, you know, I think during the pandemic, women have really been hit through the workforce. So it'd be great to support them. And Motherwell Cheshire is another fantastic charity that I came across through my podcast. I'd interviewed the CEO, Kate, and they work tirelessly to help and support vulnerable women across their county. So I'm really excited to be able to donate and raise some money for those charities.
But just to go back to you finally, Rachel, you worked with Bridge Models, so you've starred on ad campaigns for Fig Leaves, Tesco's, Davina. You've worked with Davina McCall. There'll be other women listening who may look in the mirror and think, well, I don't think I look too bad for 40, whatever. You found fame at 48. What's your advice to them?
I think if you've got that dream and aspiration, I think you've got to try it, because there's nothing worse than what if. So you don't know until you try. I would get some really simple photographs. You don't have to spend any money. Do your research, look into local agencies and see what's around you, and send off photographs. But also, I think, be prepared for rejection, because for every yes you get a lot of knockbacks as well. But that's easier to take when you get to over your 40s, I think.
Yeah, and just finally, how do people find you on Instagram on the big day, Monday the 8th of February?
If you go to Rachel Peru 1, and I will be there from 8:30 in the morning till 9:30 in the evening.
Oh, that's a long day, Rachel.
It is, I know. I'm bracing myself.
Well, good luck with it. And is that Rachel Peru figure 1 or O-N-E?
Figure 1.
Great. All right. That's Rachel Peru, who found fame and fortune. I presume some fortune anyway, we hope so, after starting modelling in her 40s. So, ladies, women, if I can call you that, you can do it, you know. That's all we've got time for today. For the latest from the Daily Mail, why don't you download the Mail Plus app? Every weekday at 5 p.m. you can listen to me all over again. I'm Andrew Pearce. This is The Daily Show. I'll be back tomorrow. Have yourselves a great evening and good night.